the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Graeme Hunter with us this morning. Graeme, how are you getting on?
Morning, fellas. All good.
This Suarez story has been a remarkable and slightly delicious little piece, a morsel of food for us as we await for the La Liga season to return. And the major beneficiaries, it turns out, are Atletico Madrid. Before we get to all that, are reports of the demise of Luis Suarez somewhat exaggerated?
Depends what the reports say, Ger. Look, the fella's going to turn whatever, is it 34 in January? If you look at last season, his goal average was one goal every 122 minutes. That's still top class. If he'd arrived on the scene or throughout his career, he'd been scoring at that level, he'd still be regarded as an extremely good striker. You both know, all your listeners know, Luis Suarez has never looked like an Olympic athlete. He's been leaner or slightly more padded throughout his career. And, you know, it's what would you call it? It's fiendish that he's had somebody or other scraping around in his knees or at his ankles relatively constantly over the last 3 years. But his goal total has been extraordinary. His assist total is extraordinary. He, in terms of brains, football brains, never mind the dark arts, in terms of technique and brains, he's still an elite striker. So there are certain clubs where his lack of pace, his lack of stamina across a month, never mind across 90 minutes, would look a little out of place. In a robust athletic team like Atleti, where it's not the case that he's expected to do no running, but where the service to him can be constant, where his teaching of others where he wants the ball and when he wants the ball, the cutting edge that any team, I heard you talking about scoring tries in the Six Nations, any sports outfit, male or female, any sport, where the process is right, but the end goal is always just a little bit off. You miss the target, you hit the target, the opposition get in the way just as you want them to convert your work. Then the work of the process diminishes because mentally people are like, well, we're not going to convert, so I'll make a different choice. Suarez can go to Atleti and add teeth to this pretty boisterous machine that they've got behind him. Then it can be really exciting and easily, in my opinion, easily, Suarez to Atleti makes Atleti serious, not favourite, but serious title contenders for the first time in many years.
Yeah, sorry, of course, there's been a couple of rounds back. Atleti and Barca haven't played yet. Real Madrid have played. They've drawn their opening game of the season. The soap opera is something that is always attendant, given the amount of newspapers and the massive listened radio shows that happen late at night. And it's always going to be part of this. It's also, like, I really enjoy the fact that the comic book villain is joining Atletico Madrid. It's like the most perfect signing that they could have possibly made from a football perspective, but also from, you know, just this is a unified bunch of people. They believe in the same things.
Are you saying that just like a kid at Christmas unwraps a toy and says to his parents or his carers, does it come with batteries? Are you saying that they unwrap Luis Suarez and say, does it come with a knuckle duster?
Yeah, pretty much.
If that's what you're saying, then I kind of hear you.
Maybe they're supplying with one. That's the type of people they are here, and they're polishing it for him.
There are some words in this language which are just evocative. So you say Cholo Simeone. Now, the image that gets conjured up is of this ferocious arm. You know, he's like a giant condor taking off. And, you know, as a player, he was ferocity embodied. So Cholo Simeone. And Diego Costa, this is a certain kind of housery, and it rhymes with mitt, that he's famous for. He, like Suarez, doesn't fancy geographical exploration around the green turf of Spain's leagues, not too much. And Costa is another case. And Luis Suarez makes, you know, Costa look like a tortoise compared to, you know, the athletes that they once were. But Costa, let's say this deal to Atleti that I wrote about 2 weeks ago is likely to happen, takes place. He's having a press conference today at your time, 11:30 at Barcelona. I very much hope there's some finger pointing goes on. So that the Luis Suarez show starts today, I hope. But imagine you've had an afternoon of trying to cope with Luis Suarez. It's the 75th minute. You've done well or badly. The team's done well or badly. You see his number going up on the touchline. It's Diego Costa coming on for 15 minutes. There are certain types of defending, both in Spain and Europe, who are like, right, I'm off. Yeah, boss, take me off as well. So you've got Cholo Simeone, Diego Costa, Luis Suarez, but most importantly, because that's a little bit of fun we've been having there, if you think about Saul and Koke and Angel and Carrasco trying to supply Luis Suarez, with Costa on the rare occasions when it's a double centre forward, João Félix in behind, who I think was second top scorer last season with 6, and that's another key factor. You know, the top scorer numbers have gone down since Griezmann left, but the second top scorer in the last 3 seasons, since 2017, have been, you know, no more than 8 goals, which was alpha. That's not good enough. So the fit is good. I think Suarez can teach the rest of his squad a great deal, in my opinion. I think he's, you know, you both know me really well, and I'm not afraid of saying what I've had to learn. And I had to learn about Suarez when he came. I'd seen him a little bit at Ajax. I'd seen him for Uruguay quite a lot, and I'd watched him, you know, a chunky amount of his Liverpool time. But my eye was drawn to his goals and the massive errors, some of his behaviour. I had no idea, and I had to revamp my understanding about exactly how smart he is on the pitch, inventive, creative, and how technical he is. So I had to upgrade my understanding. You take that to Atleti, which is a team waiting to achieve something really big because, okay, they won the Europa League, but they need to win the title. They need to have another shot at winning the Champions League, which they gave up with a whimper last season. I think Suarez is, they'd love him if they could have bought him at 29-30. Yeah, in a beautiful world, things go better. You take what's available to you. I think, like you say, Atleti and Suarez, as long as his knee holds up, should be a match made in heaven.
I like the sound of that attack, like Felix and Costa and Suarez, like two men and a baby should be the nickname for that attack for Atletico. How good have Suarez and Costa been throughout their career in terms of nurturing the younger members of their squads and showing them the ways of the world, you know, that particular type of housing that you mentioned there?
Costa would show the ways of the world to the younger players and how to play poker. He's an exceptional poker player. In terms of showing teammates on the pitch about how to behave and how to move. Now, he's a man who's very much for himself. Suarez is different. Because we view them as pantomime villains, and because we view them as guys who give referees and central defenders total nightmares, you pair them together for image. But in terms of personality, maybe even in terms of personality, they're very different. Diego Costa off the pitch is Blue the Bear, mucking around, pranks, trying to bend the rules, winning heaps of money, particularly at poker. Very good card player. Luis Suarez is hard. He's tough. But yes, if there's a team, for example, I know specifically which teammates at Liverpool he still talks about in a derogatory way, because he didn't rate their attitude, their toughness, their hard winning mentality. Way back, not now. But at Barcelona, to answer your question, for example, when Griezmann was struggling, and when Griezmann was struggling with Suarez's best mate in life now, not just in football, Messi, it was Suarez who reached out to Griezmann, who bucked him up, who tried to keep him optimistic, who helped him both in public and in private. So that's why I picked on Suarez as somebody who can teach. He can teach those who should be giving more that he's a little bit disappointed in. He'll frighten them into doing more. But the area that I'm talking about is the one where he can help a handful of footballers become smarter, become better able to shave off the little bits that have stopped them from winning big, big prizes, whether it be winning the derby against Madrid. Listen, speaking personally, I'd back, well, Suarez completes this move. I back Suarez to score for Atletico against Barcelona. I back Rakitic to score for Sevilla against Barcelona. They think that they owe the directors, the president, that, you know, I two fingers up in their face. And they'll do it as the type of characters they are. So I go back to your point, Matthew. Suarez is a teacher, definitely, as long as he doesn't think you're somebody who's giving 80% or somebody who's a little bit... He's as macho, he's as testosterone-full as you'd imagine off the pitch. You have to bring your war face to training, to games, otherwise you'll hear it from him. But anybody that wants to respond will get shown the way of world-class, not just the way of the world, from Suarez.
I hope he brings all of that with him. Real Madrid obviously started Odegaard, this wunderkind who we've been hearing so much about since the time he was about 12 at the weekend. He played 70 minutes. Is he everything that's been advertised? Obviously, he's been on loan. You know, he's played some senior football. But in a Real Madrid shirt, this is his moment. Is he ready for the big time just yet?
I think so. He's... The key thing to say is that he is at 20 what people were claiming he was at 16. First of all, in life, when you get pushed into a situation you can't handle, I admire people on or off, in or out of sport, who then go back and say, okay, that was a bruising experience. I want to learn. I want to rebuild all the things I found out that were missing from my repertoire when I got put not only out of my comfort zone, but into a place that I couldn't handle. That was Odegaard. Zidane was his coach in the B team when he was pushed through by the club, by the president, and Ancelotti was told he had to play him. It was ridiculous at 16 years and whatever, however many hundred days, become the youngest brilliant player. It was wrong. He wasn't ready in any sense. If you look at the way he exploited Dutch football, if you look at the year, the two-thirds of the year he put in at Real Sociedad, the last third, I mean, badly hampered by tendonitis. What we see is a footballer who's confident, who's brave, he shows the ball between lines, he uses the ball well, he's got a harder head, he shrugged off his dad, who was both his boon and his bane as a young man. His dad helped him do things, helped him get his profile up. But his dad also made the decisions that weren't right. Odegaard said, "Dad, I'm on my own now. Leave me alone. I'll look after myself." That's for his good. I think that Madrid have got a powerful midfield. If they come across Modric, Casemiro, and Valverde, one thing that they want is that explosive. I'll get the ball and I'll drag the other team in the wrong way, or I'll punch holes through the defensive lines. And Isco can't do that. Asensio will largely play wide right, coming on to his beautiful left foot. Odegaard fits a profile that they don't really have, and he's extremely exciting. But you both remember that we don't judge Odegaard on what he does now based on this wunderkind idea. When you go to a club like, and there are clubs all around the world you can make comparisons, but if you go to a club like Barcelona or Real Madrid, you haven't arrived. That's just the beginning. So in how he copes with the pressure, how he copes with the relentless number of games that he didn't have in Holland or Real Sociedad, constant top-class games when European football comes back. We're on a learning journey too. You glad you can't automatically say, Odegaard will absolutely rip it up. Give him this season to bed in. Not that he can't achieve things this season, he definitely can. But a proper judgment to see whether we're talking about an elite European class player, which is what he looks like, you have to give him this season to bed in. A season in which I don't think it's unrealistic to speak of 8 or 10 goals and 10 or 12 assists. And if he's done that, then watch out for the hype next summer.
The transfer business by Madrid has been interesting insofar as they've signed nobody and let 16 players leave this summer. It's one way of approaching it, and if you wanted to put this in a very positive light, Graham, you could say that they're trying to rack up a few pounds for next summer. Next summer then could be the year where Kylian Mbappe has 1 year less on his Paris Saint-Germain contract. Do you think that's part of the strategy that Real Madrid are operating under this summer? Or I say summer, this offseason, exactly. I should say.
No, you've said it exactly, Owen. It is part of it. One, when everybody was back, the guys they had out on loan, the guys who graduated through the youth system and now got first team features, the squad was 33 or 34 players at the beginning of this transfer market. You can't have that. It would have been disastrous. The squad was already too heavy for Zidane. He didn't want that. He wants a hard operating system of about 21 players, 22 players. There are kids who came through from the youth system, played last week against Real Sociedad, or at least one came on. No, I think both came on. So what we're talking about is the express wishes of Zidane that he doesn't have people loafing around at training ground going, I'm not playing, I know I'm not playing. But the money thing is equally important. Yes, they want Mbappe. Yes, they expect to sign him next summer. And yes, I think, personally, that unless something dramatic, really dramatic, happens, I think Mbappe's a Real Madrid. I do not believe that Mbappe will choose Liverpool as much as they love him. I do believe that Mbappe will choose Real Madrid, unless there are real dramas, social, sporting dramas this during this year. I think Mbappe moves to Real Madrid to be able to pay for that. Yes, they need to conserve money. And they said at the beginning of the market window that they wouldn't be buying players. I doubt that. I think that if they can now, we're into fine-tuning. Well, if they can get rid of Jovic, then I think they do their best to add a centre-forward that can supplant Benzema, play with Benzema, give our rest sometimes. They need a nine, and I don't mean a striker, I mean a nine. So I think there's still possibilities of them doing business before October 5th, but you detailed exactly what 50% of the strategy about, which is to get a war chest, meaning we've got the Mbappe saga next summer as Paris Saint-Germain and Real Madrid fight it out, and people say, Liverpool might still.
I guess part of that war chest can be accumulated from not having to pay $300,000 a week to Gareth Bale. It lessens the blow somewhat. It's a question that we probably won't know the answer to of until a few weeks' time, but can Gareth Bale recapture his 2015-2016 form 4 years down the line?
I don't see any reason why not. Well, there is one reason, which is that we've learned more and more, and the evidence was good even at Spurs in the early days. If his head is right, if his head is focused, I see no reason why Gareth Bale shouldn't be a highly, highly impactful Premier League player. He's in a side where the ball gets moved well. He's in a side which is robust at the, I say at the back, which is robust, I think, in terms of when they win the ball and how quickly they want to use it. I think the relationship with Kane, in football terms, can be good. I think so. It's clearly going to be about fine-tuning about where Son plays and Bale plays. In that Bale can have several positions. He can play off Kane, that's for sure. He can play right coming onto his left. And he can go out onto the left and play like a wide man winger, which is not his preference. So you'd imagine that he slots in at the right of, that there's nominally a, either from three or two in behind Kane, which is Son and Bale on either side. And it's hugely exciting. And I think if you're asking, you know, was he not being played at Real Madrid because he's gone? No, absolutely not. This is a guy who's only 31. He's played whatever, well over 600 games. His goal average at Real Madrid was very high indeed. It's about finding your competitive fitness again, which is diminished, which he's got time to do at Spurs. And then it's about, is he enjoying himself? Is his head right? Because he's a slightly more delicate flower than the players I'm used to admiring. That's just a fact. He's got other concerns in his head. And there's been a dulling of the competitive edge, in my opinion. I think it's still there. At 31, he's still a fantastic athlete. His shooting and passing is still absolutely top class. I think he'll be a hit. And good luck to him too. He's very, very talented.
It's one of the great revenge tours. If you put him and Mourinho together, saying effectively "screw you" to Real Madrid on both their parts, I mean the chances of it happening are very slim, given that both of them are definitely way off where they were when they were. You know, Bale was the best player in the Premier League. Jose Mourinho was once the best manager in world football, but maybe this is like a Magnificent Seven old style. Let's get the band back together, one last tour. You know.
Well, properly sticking their fingers up Real Madrid's nose would have to wait till next season if Spurs can make Champions League. And the possibility of Spurs making the Champions League and Bale and Mourinho still being at Spurs. So those three things all happening at once to play Real Madrid and properly make the revenge scenario, I'd have my doubts. In terms of going, hey, look over here, we've got a new girlfriend, everything's wonderful, how are you? Like, oh, nothing doing. Okay. Yeah, I can see your point of view. Extending that a little bit, I'm going to be fascinated about how Mourinho feels about Bale. Mourinho is not typically somebody who swallows rejection or disappointment all that well. In my humble opinion, he's a grudge holder. When he was at Manchester United, he obtained permission from Florentino Perez to speak directly to Gareth Bale, and he did. So they spoke on the phone, no intermediaries involved. And Mourinho said, listen, I want you to come to Manchester United. We're building up the money, we'll make a big bid, but you need to come out and say you want to leave Real Madrid, and Bale didn't do it. So therefore, I forget if it was in maybe Washington, in the pre-season friendly between Manchester United and Real Madrid, we got footage of Mourinho in the tunnel saying, I couldn't sign you because you didn't speak. So he was frustrated. He's obviously got a massive asset in Bale, part of which will have been his doing, a bigger part of which will have been Jonathan Barnett and Daniel Levy. So I'd be really, according to that voice now, lads, I'll be really interested just to see how well things go between Mourinho and Bale. And it's not a euphemism about this is going to go, you know, tetas arriba. I'm saying that this is a euphemism for Bale's going to have to deliver. And if he delivers and everything's sweet, then I can see it being, you know, the land of bees and honey. If things don't go well and Bale isn't doing what Mourinho wants, there's a little memory of you let me down once. And then it could be, the winter could be cold.
Well, it's definitely worth keeping a very close eye on. I was unaware, now that you mention it, that footage rings a little bit of a bell. I'm like, I didn't know that they'd spoken. And maybe Gareth Bale was just
directly
treating him mean to keep him keen, you know?
Call me, Gareth. Call me. Gareth? Josie doesn't like that. Yeah, he was in the tunnel, if you remember, and he was haranguing him like an angry school, or like, your dinner's in the oven. Your dinner's in the oven. Where you didn't know your dinner's in the dog. Where have you been? And it wasn't an edifying sight. I couldn't sign you because you didn't. He doesn't forget those sort of things, Josie. If things go well and Bale is performing, then it's parked away. It's parked away. No big deal. And I definitely hope that the fit is good, that there's enjoyment to be had in that new stadium, watching Bale flourish. And as much as I would categorise, you know, the thing we all do, if I were in Bale's shoes, what would I be doing? I would categorise myself as a different kind of person. I'd make different choices. But that doesn't negate the fact that when Bale's on form, it's a massive pleasure for people like us to watch him. So I really hope that it's a fruitful union and that there is no need for counselling in 5 or 6 months.
Look, we're completely out of time because we hadn't even got to Barcelona yet. Just one last question. Is the Entente Cordiale, has it happened? Is there a little bit of peace? Do we expect at least now the football to take over and Koeman will be given an opportunity to build something for a couple of months maybe? Does he have 5 or 6 weeks?
That is too big. That's too many questions for one answer for a short time. So I'll just say this to you. For UEFA, I spoke to Koeman yesterday, and at the moment, Koeman is tickled pink with Messi's attitude. Does that mean that all the other things you were asking about are going to go right for Barcelona? I said, listen, if you get nice odds in Villarreal winning at the Camp Nou this weekend, then maybe you have a little tickle.
Right. Okay. That's always a good tip from you. Graham, good stuff. We'll get you on to talk Barca proper afterwards next week. Thanks a million.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.